What up, Primers? JC here. Can't get enough of Footy Prime the podcast? Why not head over to Footy Prime's YouTube? Head to youtube.com/footyprime for exclusive video content. Then make your way over to wearefootyprime.com for all things Footy Prime, including our official gear from Admiral and our One Ball Gin from Nickel 9 Distillery. And make sure to follow and subscribe across all platforms, from Twitter to Instagram to Facebook to TikTok. Footy Prime has got you covered for all things footy. Thanks so much for listening, and back to the show.
Oi, the boys and girls on Footy Prime on occasion are known to use vulgarities and frankly appalling language, and sometimes the tales can get quite adult in nature, so keep the volume down if there are kiddies around, and thank you for listening.
Oh, let's go!
Booty, booty,
it's time to get this party started.
Booty, booty,
it's time to get this party started. You know that we are the number one show. So grab your fucking mitts and now it's time to go. Cause it's the
Footy Footy.
It's time to get this party started.
It's the Footy Footy.
It's time to get this party started. With Danny, Jimmy, Gregor, Andy, Jim, and JC. All we know and all we talk about is
Footy Footy.
It's time to get this party started tonight.
You're listening to FP Presents CF Montreal 3 Questions. Footy Prime, your almost daily footy fix.
Hey everybody, this is a CF Montreal 3 Questions, week 15. I'm Amy Walsh and I'm joined by Ollie Brett, play-by-play man for RDS and host of FC 99 on BPM Sports. Go check out all his stuff. It's always interesting and compelling interviews and content. So Ollie, you were away this weekend though. You didn't catch the game. Did you have a good one?
Had a great one. Managed to watch the game twice. Once with friends. I was in Gatineau. So it was interesting to have a dinner and a movie, if you can call it that. Dinner in a Nashville, Montreal. And then obviously it's always a bit harder to be very, very niched in your analysis or your observations when you're having a chat with people at the same time. So I got a chance to watch it again this morning. So lots to talk about. It was an interesting one.
And it's interesting that you framed it as dinner and a movie. So a scoreless draw at home when the team was on quite a slide and looking to regain their footing. What type of movie would that then be?
A prequel to an interesting sequel, hopefully. That would be my way of presenting it. Because if you look at that match and you tell me that's the second game of the season after what we experienced in 2023, knowing that Martinez is still out, Kokoro is still out, Yankov was on the bench, Edwards injured, I think everybody would have taken that. We'd be seeing that glass definitely half full. Now, the timing is quite different with what you experienced over the last few weeks, so that's why I think everybody's going to be a bit more guarded, but it was way better than what you saw in the previous matches.
Yeah, it really was, and to that end, it's been a rough few weeks.
Yeah,
lots of off-field turmoil, on-field ineptitude, you might say. Mm-hmm. And when I showed up to the stadium on Saturday and had a conversation with a number of people, I quite honestly had no idea what to expect when that team was going to come out. And my colleagues at TSN 690, who have joined us before in this program, John Still and Grant Needham, we asked this question pregame, and I'll change the tense now that the game is in the rearview mirror. Was that performance enough? And they were able to share the points, but like if we dive into the performance, is that enough to move forward? Is that enough of a positive and enough for them to grab a hold of and maybe change the course of the season at this point?
It's enough to show you that you're trying to get a hold on things and that there isn't that sense of people have given up or have just checked out. I think in terms of, you just look at first of all, Laurent Courtois made interesting changes, putting Sosa, we'll talk about it in a minute, but Sosa on the left, Alvarez, Campbell was on the bench. So he kind of mixed things up a bit. One of the big like friction points for the fans over the last few weeks, especially in the Canadian Championship, getting knocked out by Forge and getting hammered in Toronto, was just a lack of competitiveness and desire to win the little battles within the war. You look at Alvarez, you look at Waterman, you look at Corbo. He put in I don't know if it was on Mukhtar in the second half, but it was around the center circle. Nashville were going on the break and Corbo just stands in. That was after a Mathieu Choignard tackle that just missed the mark, but that was very, very committed. that's extremely positive. Then you had, apart from the final third, you had some interesting football being played, which you didn't really see over the last few weeks. You had moments, and that's why I'm telling you that if this was the second game of the season, you'd be going, okay, we see what they've worked on in training camp. We're seeing this kind of realignment with 2022 after 2023, where everybody was playing one pass at the time at a time. Now you're trying to bring the third man in, maybe the fourth as well. So those are all positive signs, but it's a very small sample based on the fact that you're now winless in nine all competitions. This DC match and then Philadelphia before the international break, they're really, really important to know if this was a kind of a semi flash in the pan or if this was actually something interesting to start building on again.
Yeah, I'm happy to hear you say build, because that's what they have to do with this small snapshot of games.
Yep.
And maybe make it digestible in the way that Courtois referred to and we've talked about on this podcast, those first six games away to begin the season, where he talked about that as being a championship of sorts. So now maybe they zoom in a little bit and they just address this next run of games so that they can change the course, change the narrative with this season and see those same hallmarks of play. Because I think that's what was important. It was the character beneath the performance. You had a sold out stadium. You had the wave breaking out. So actually, maybe before we move forward, what's your take on the wave in a soccer stadium, Ollie Brett?
You know what? I saw the wave and I said, I won't mention it. I'll just leave it out there and see if Amy, because straight away when I saw the wave, I was thinking of the full kits in the stadium, your question last week.
Yep.
I used to despise it. And now I'm very aware that maybe it's getting a bit older. Maybe it's understanding that my point of view is far from the truth. If everybody's having fun, just let them be. And you know what? I think it's also the experience of the last maybe 10 years at the stadium, where there was very much a right way to support and a wrong way to support. And that led to all sorts of clashes. And I'm talking about Stade Saputo now. I'm not talking about Philadelphia, Nashville. They do whatever they want, but there was often a heavy kind of, you have to do it right to be in our section, or you have to sing this way if you want to be a real Impact or CF Montreal supporter. So I think that having a full stadium is the main thing. Mm-hmm. And if the price to pay for a full stadium is people who have a different way of doing things and they start the wave, I don't have an issue with it.
Yeah, my issue with the wave is I feel like you're not engaged in the match. You're not watching the game. You're not supporting your players on the pitch. You are watching to see when it's your turn to stand up and participate in the wave. But that said, I think more and more like you, in as much as I can be disdainful of it, I think that it's fans showing their support in the way that they know how. And it's positivity, which is something that this team so desperately needs from their fan base, given how eerie that atmosphere was, especially in the first half against Forge, which we didn't really have a chance to discuss. So that stands in stark contrast to that. And I think you have to be really careful when you're judging people's fandom.
100%. And we were on a panel together with I forget what the conference was for fans.
The North American Supporters Club.
Exactly. Yeah. And that was held in Montreal at the, was it the end of last year or the beginning of this year? I'm a bit confused.
This year, yeah.
And that was one of my points, be it when we speak to interact with people from the media, be it live, and I'm talking from a fan perspective because I can also have that hat. When we speak to people from the media, when we speak to colleagues at work, when we show up to a stadium, to be very, very careful not to outcast someone who wants to take part, but then starts wondering, am I doing the right thing? Is this, the word is a bit too strong, but you'll understand what I mean. Is this safe for me to show up and shout something? And maybe you can have an interesting conversation, but starting to tell thousands of people who might not have been there on a May Saturday evening, because not too long ago, before Apple came in, we were wondering what this would do to spring and autumn matches, because in Montreal with the weather, we always had those matches in the afternoon. And I think it's been a resounding success. And I think your word is right. Judging, we need to be very careful with that.
Yeah, and avoid gatekeeping and make it a more inclusive environment. So who are we to say that the wave sucks? It's the fans just expressing themselves.
Hey, that's your words, by the way. I never said the words.
How dare you, Ollie? No, there you go. Right. It's 100% me. But so going back to the performance, so there was more commitment, there was more fighting spirit, yep, more of a work rate from an individual, but also a collective standpoint. And something that I spoke about in the press conference to Laurent Courtois at the end of the game is that I said, I think he was a bit confused by my question. If I could go over and do it again, I would probably would. But I said, despite sharing the points, was the win for the team tonight within the performance and the fact that there was nothing that existed in isolation, that there was a knitted together backline, the team parts were more connected, there was success in the regains because there were numbers around the ball, which is something we didn't see in the first half against Forge, was something that we were so far away from at BMO Field in that shambolic performance against our fiercest rival. So, and I'm saying we an hour a lot, I should be careful with that. But so for CF Montreal, I think that is definitely something to build on, but they still didn't seize their chance. Nashville was there for the taking. CF Montreal couldn't convert. So they had 13 shots, only two on target. So they're still missing that finish, that threat, that composure in the box, even though they were more successful, I think, in their decision-making in that final ball, something Courtois spoke about himself. Mm-hmm. But do you think that that will return to their game, Ollie, with some of these players that you mentioned off the top returning from the infirmary in the likes of Kokoro and Opoku?
Eventually Joseph Martinez, who was back in town at the weekend and supposedly is already close to returning. Absolutely. Because I think that Vilsain has to, I know he's young, you have to put one of those away. You had two really, really good chances. I think if you have Yankov on the break instead of Bryce Duke, who was, I find, poor getting into the final third, there was a lot of interesting like flicks and link-up play. But when he got to the final third, that counterattack, was it at the end of the first half, was it?
When Vilsain on the break off the defensive corner.
And my issue is not that he loses the ball. It's that when he starts feeling Schaffelberg is catching up with him, he kind of just takes the foot off the pedal. But taking the foot off the pedal, there's no issue with that. But what are you turning to next? And it's just, well, it's gone. I'll just lay it off without much intention and desire to give a gift to the guy I'm actually giving the ball to. So I think, yeah, you have a completely different scenario. And coming back to what you said about Laurent Courtois, the question you asked after the game, I thought it was interesting, especially coming from a big fan of mixed martial arts. He said, I don't like the expression, but a lot of people around me were talking about stopping the bleeding. Now, just a quick sidebar to say, I'd be very curious to know who's talking about stopping this bleeding. Is it the players? Is it his staff? Is it somebody higher up? I just thought that was really, really interesting. Having said that, he's a fan of mixed martial arts, and you know that the bleeding can actually stop the fight, can just make you absolutely unable to compete. So it is a big, big plus to have renewed your clean sheet for the first time in way too long. So I think that's positive. But you're talking about the final third. Juan is, I'm a big, big fan of the guy. His delivery in the box was a nightmare at the weekend. It was absolutely shambolic. And I think that if he changes that, the whole picture changes, because you're talking about Courtois' comments after the game. One of the things he said was, we need to be smarter with the ball that we choose, the pass that we choose in the final third, but we also, and I agree with him, have to have more numbers in the box. But if you have more numbers and Juan still passes the ball into the feet of the guy defending the first post, I mean, you can have all of 11 guys in the box. You're still not going to find anyone because the delivery is that poor. The good news is he gets in those positions, but Juan absolutely needs to get better delivery. The crosses were close to shambolic. And again, I'm a big, big fan, but that needs to be fixed and fast.
And what's frustrating for me in watching Juan is that he can be such, he can have an even more impactful presence, because the turn of pace that you see for him to get out of trouble in his, in his own half or his own third, and then to play the ball progressively on, I'm not talking about the final ball, but where is that instinctiveness and the willingness to take on players in that final third? I would like to see him go 1v1 a little bit more, get to the byline, and then cross the ball in there, where the early cross for me seems to be the one that he's choosing more often than not. And when he does get into the box, where he gets a little bit deeper and it's more of a cutback versus a floating cross, he seems to have more success. But I agree with you, like that. And it's not just Rouen, it's collectively, it's the decision-making. So it's sometimes not, as Courtois, to use his words, finding an extra pass. It's perhaps sometimes taking a pass away and then finding that ability to get to the net yourself that seems to be lacking for them.
Yeah, I don't have a huge issue with him not going 1v1, because I see Juan more as a Jordi Alba than a guy who'll take players on. What I agree with you with, though, is trying to find the link up. Like, where's your number 10? Where's your striker? Because Vilsaint had a so-so game, I find, at the weekend. If you had a Martinez or a Kokoro, Yankov or a Vilsaint, even Sunusi Ibrahim has done a half-decent job at that over the last month or two, at just making themselves available so that somebody on the side can play into them and then get in behind. If you start linking that up with Juan, he can be an absolute nightmare for defenders. And then obviously the final pass needs to be better in the box.
And before we talk about the back line and an incredible performance by Joel Waterman, I wanted to talk about Lassiter just for a minute. It wasn't on the docket, but something you just said made me think of it. So we talked about Vilsaint and opportunities that perhaps eluded him, where he could have put the game away or given them all 3 points at home. But that occasion that Lassiter had, where he goes up with his foot, I think it's actually on a cross from Rouen. He goes out, he lifts his foot up when he should have just leaned in with his head, and that could have been it. And I thought, you put Sosa, again, something that we're going to dive into a little bit later, as an experiment in that left channel, freeing Lassiter up, like you absolving him really of those defensive responsibilities that he clearly isn't equipped to deal with. But then he has a frustrating performance where he doesn't hold the ball up well, his first touch lets him down, he has the occasions to finish and then he doesn't do it. So is this just perhaps a player who's maybe ill at ease because he hasn't really been in one position since the beginning of the season?
He was for a big chunk of the start of the season, and then he played, what was it, two up top, then back for two outside the wing back on the left, then back up top. He's an attacking player. He's not a striker. And I'm not saying that as a jab, far from it, because he scored earlier on this season, but that's a striker's chance. And I put it down. That's why Vilsaint, having two chances to just open his foot as he did against Miami in Montreal and just wrap it around Thierry Henry style, like, both of them are an opportunity to do that. I didn't think Willis was particularly well positioned for either. I think the chance was there to be taken, and that has to be Vilsaint's bread and butter. Now, that might come with experience. So, and you're right to mention that was a great cross by Juan. That was, by a country mile, his best cross of the game. And you see how dangerous that can be, because if Lassiter doesn't get there, but the defender puts it in the back of his own net, I mean, you're putting it in a different, in a more difficult position to defend for the opposition. So, Lassiter, my feeling was that, okay, now you're back in a position that you'd kind of forgotten for a couple of games, in a moment where the team is off and that the link on play is a bit harder. It's not easy playing with Vilsaint, who won't make too many runs in behind. I think that's something he needs to bring to his game a bit more. Lassiter would do it more naturally, but he's playing underneath Vilsaint, beside Duke, who's a guy who wants to link up, not a guy who'll go in deep. So I think all those factors just made Lassiter pretty much a bystander, is maybe a bit too strong, but he wasn't really a factor in that match.
No, not his best performance, but you do see where he's effective, where he's able to get the ball and he's already running onto it. and then he can do some damage.
Yep.
But when he's not put in a position to succeed, where he's doing things that he's less comfortable with, the whole team suffers as a result. So moving on to Joel Waterman. So that perhaps was, I mean, he's had some highs and lows this season. I think the team conceding on average 3 goals a game during the month of May, the second worst defense in all of MLS, hasn't helped his individual case out. Mm-hmm. But what a performance by Joel Waterman. And my second question was, is he the linchpin of this team? The way that Waterman goes, the team goes.
Gabriele Corbo is still the one who's, to me, the mystery factor or the mystery kind of part in all this, because he wasn't there for the thrashing in Seattle. He was there for a few bad results there. But he wasn't there when Miami came back from 2-0 down in Montreal. He didn't start in Toronto when you got thrashed with fire. So I'm just wondering if it's Joel Waterman's influence or if you've got a mix at the back. That's interesting, because Corbo was there at the beginning of the year when you were unbeaten in 3. They have, how many points do they have now so far? Is it 14 or 13? I forget.
Around 14.
And 8 of those were with him as a starter. Now, the sample is maybe a bit too small, but I'm not able to just isolate Joel Waterman as the guy. Having said that, if he has a game like he has, does it have an influence on everybody around him? 100%. Does it give you a better chance of getting points and getting a clean sheet? Absolutely, because there was a few dicey moments as well with Sirois taking chances, mm-hmm. building from the back, which is coming back to what I said to you, I believe it was last week. They're heart-stopping moments, but they show you that, as I said at the beginning of the pod today, you're still believing in what the coach is asking you to do. And that, to me, has to be a huge positive, because if everybody's saying, you know what, this coach is going on about X game plan, but we're going to go with why because we don't really believe in it and we might be in huge trouble. That's not what you're seeing. You're seeing this team stay true to its DNA, its philosophy. And when you do that, you need to have a guy in the middle of that back three that's really, really solid. And that was the case with Joel Waterman in that match.
I like what you said there about Sirois and what that means from a team's perspective, because you're seeing the tenets of play, the hallmarks of play in the willingness to take risks.
Absolutely.
That's Jonathan Sirois, and he alluded to it post-game, where it's him moving out of his comfort zone. Because you saw him have success. You saw him find, I think on a couple of occasions, you saw him find Bryce Duke defeat almost near the halfway line as a result of the ball being recycled and moved through the back line back to Sirois's feet. And he's able to break some lines and find Duke and then send his team going the other way. And you're going to see the opposite. Right? You're going to see the bad plays and coughing up the ball and gifts to Nashville, which I think success for this team is not only keeping the clean sheet, but it was snuffing out the likes of Mukhtar. Mm-hmm. It was Schaffelberg. Sure, he got loose a couple of times in that, you know, despite Corbo being there, despite Alvarez, I think, doing very well around Waterman, which is part and parcel why he has such a strong game. But there's just a curious seam that always seems to exist in between Rouen and whoever's playing the right side of that 3-man center back. But I mean, this is a team that looked so, so much better. But Alvarez, I wanted you to touch on. I want to hear your thoughts on him. He's a player to me who is growing on me a little bit more.
Yeah.
Looking at him physically, he doesn't look very mobile, but he seems to move a little bit quicker than you expect him to. And his positional awareness is quite good. So I think that his knowledge and his awareness around a player like Waterman, who is going to make some forays forward, who's going to be a little bit livelier, for better or for worse, on the ball. And then also Corbo instead of a George Campbell, who is a little bit of a wild card, mm-hmm. I think gives you more solidity in the back for CF Montreal.
Alvarez is tough. And when he puts the foot in, he's, you know, and where was it? I forget what game it was at the end of a match earlier on, maybe a month and a half ago. He stopped 2, if not 3 shots on the bounce in the box. And you just went, okay, this guy is willing to put his body. He's got a real defender's mentality. Now, it doesn't mean that he's not skillful with the ball at his feet, but his main thing is stop the ball, prevent him from getting in the box. And when they're in the box, he still has the courage to put the foot in. He did it again at the weekend, and you go, okay, like, is this a moment to leave your feet and go in for that tackle? And more often than not, it's a good decision. And I agree with you that he's growing on me as well. I think he's often been kind of thrown in for two or three matches, taken out, thrown in. So maybe that's affected our perception of him in the hierarchy. If we knew he was only coming in once every 6 or 7 games, you'd go, okay, I'll just judge you as a guy who's coming in and growing into the squad. Now, that hasn't really been the case. He came in, he replaced Corbo, and all of a sudden we were wondering if that was more a demotion for Corbo than a promotion for Alvarez. And we're seeing that we're maybe just in between those two universes, and he's going to be used for a few matches in a row and then maybe disappear. Maybe that's the Courtois way of doing it. But I agree with you. He's solid. Physically, I find him interesting. And obviously, if you have somebody on the left like Sosa, and I'm not saying you need to go with him every match, but you know he will want to defend. So maybe that's a bit of a safety net for Alvarez as well, knowing that he won't be on his own having to defend that left side.
Guess who and guess what? Footy Prime is launching a gin and we're having a party to celebrate. Thursday, June 6th, join the whole FP crew for Footy Prime's one-night stand at Nickel 9 Distillery in Toronto. Come celebrate Footy Prime's one-ball gin with Nickel 9 Distillery mixologists on hand, Charmin's proper pies, meet and greet and photo ops with your favorite primers, and a live Atska's Almost Anything podcast. Footy Prime's one-night stand, June 6th at 7 p.m. till when we kick you out. Tickets at eventbrite.ca. Footy Prime, your almost daily footy fix.
And thank you for that segue, because that's our third question. It was, what do you think of the Sosa experiment? And I think that's Courtois' hand forced in a way, because Edwards is is injured, because, you know, you have Lassie Lapalainen injured. There's very little depth in that wingback position. Mm-hmm. But I think he's a clever player who understands the game, but he also understands his strengths and his limitations. And again, his mobility, to use that word, I use it to describe Alvarez, but he doesn't have pop or great acceleration, but he's able to be very efficient in his underlapping runs. He chooses the underlap more than he chooses the overlap, and paired well. Who would it have been there on the left there that he underlapped?
Probably last.
Yeah, or Duke sometimes was pulling out a little bit wider too, and so he's finding ways to combine and contribute to the attack, even though he gives you a more conservative look in the back line. And I think, to go back to a point that we both made earlier on, in order to gain some momentum and get some, not hallmarks, but touchstones in your season, build on that result on the weekend, is maybe you need to see some of the same faces in that back line come Wednesday night. And perhaps that Sosa experiment isn't an experiment. It's not an isolation. You see that employed perhaps on Wednesday night.
Yeah, that's an interesting point to touch on the underlap. As a former and current slow player myself, I can confirm that it's a lot quicker to get the goal or the box if you underlap than you overlap. So maybe that's an explanation. You're talking about his mobility and his intelligence. I agree with you. I think at times I flipped and flopped watching that match, because there were moments where I was thinking that can be interesting if you give it a few games of a run. And other moments where I was saying, if you had Chouinard there on the left, and I don't want to go back to a world where you're plugging holes with Chouinard consistently based on absentees, injuries, suspensions, etc. But I was thinking, yeah, in this situation, he got himself into a trap and Chouinard might be able to get out of it. You know, because it's really, really hard to go from the left of a back three to actually out wide and higher up, where you get a lot closer to the defender and you have the line to contend with. Yep. Sosa always has 7, 10, 15 yards to his left to work with. He didn't have much there. So if you turn the wrong way, you're done. If you didn't prepare yourself on the half turn to play one touch into somebody inside, Vilsain, Duke, Lassiter, you're done as well. And he lost the ball a good few times where three players just caved in on him and he had nowhere to go. I'm not saying that having a go at him, it's just he's not used to receiving the ball in those situations. And he did, he looked very much like an attacking-minded defender of a back three who was playing higher up as a defensive-minded wing back, you know, and that might feel like the same mental kind of posture, but it's not. It's quite different. So I thought it was interesting. I liked the fact that it freed up a few options for him at the back alongside Waterman. I like the idea of trying something new to see what he's able to bring, but I think he needs a good bit of coaching, a lot of video sessions and outlets. You have to have people there with him to allow him to just get that ball out of a strong bit of pressure from the opposition, or else he can get into trouble.
Yeah, outlets is key, because you saw this team in their counter-pressing numbers around the ball have success. They were able to win it, especially in the first half, in more dangerous areas and keep Nashville pinned in. Mm-hmm. But on the attack, they're missing that element in the final third, whether it's Sosa and company in those areas of the pitch in that channel, or you're talking about more down the spine. You're just missing third man runs. You're missing options and opportunities around the ball just because you don't have the numbers there. But to go back to Sosa, because in my career, I have had time where I've played more on the channel or on the outside, whether it's the midfield or as a striker. And there's something that can be suffocating about that line, you know, where you just feel limited. Whereas you play in the middle of the park, and I loved it because I felt like I could go anywhere. So like to your point about just having a plan, being coached about what your options are, what to look for, but then to just have your head on a swivel and know where you're going to go, maybe play a little bit more one touch, is something that he could definitely add to his game if he gets the run out again.
Well, yeah, that's the question. You know, is this a plan that you might turn to regularly enough between now and the end of the season? Well, then invest the time. I think it's absolutely worth it. If this was just a one-off or for one or two games, well, then kind of cross your fingers and hope for the best and work on the rest, because there's an awful lot of other stuff to work on. But just to finish off on what you said, it's really interesting because you're right that it can be suffocating. I got to a point at some stage when I was playing under Mark Dos Santos for the reserve team, the Impact's reserve team. I got to a stage where I loved having the line as a reference. And it really depends on the person. And that's where you have to have a sit down with your players. You have to kind of look at them in training and see what they like. Do they like having all the options, or all the options kind of something that works against them because they don't have the two or three reference points that they know will be there no matter what? They don't have to, as Mathieu Choignard does really well in the middle, twist one way, turn the other, and then they've opened up all the options rather than those options being there, because behind you, you've got a line and that doesn't even factor in as a possibility. So it's really interesting, and that shows how complex the psychology of coaching can become.
And it also shows, I think, what Sosa was able to do just defensively. Like, we're talking specifically about what he lent to the team offensively when they were on the ball, but when they were out of possession and what he provided to that back line, I think is crucial, because you saw, you know, you saw Nashville switch Schaffelberg. They wanted him away from Rouen because he was on a losing end of that battle. Yeah. And then they put him over on the right-hand side, and Sosa was able to control him really well. And you only saw Shaq Moore later on in the contest get loose a little bit in that channel and cause problems for CF Montreal. So that's definitely looking for the positive now to build on, and something that I pulled out of that performance, that scoreless draw at home where they shared the points. Was there anything else that you wanted to get to, Ollie, before we say bye?
I didn't get the last 2 or 3 minutes of the presser at the end of the match. Did Laurent Courtois give any kind of update on Joel Waterman?
In terms of his health and his fitness? Yeah. If he did, I missed it. I think that he was okay, because he came out, it looked like cramp. But then we were talking about potentially hamstring.
Well, that's basically, that's the question mark I have now. Looking ahead, you've got a match at home on Wednesday against DC United. You know, physically, it's a team that can be a beast in terms of pressing because they have a very Red Bull way of doing things. They like playing.
And your favorite Renaissance man, Ollie.
Well, that's it. So they love going to their striker up top, who's an absolute beast at holding it up, winning headers. If you don't have Waterman, that's some ask for Corbo, who hasn't been starting regularly. So that's going to be an interesting one. But those injuries, if they keep kind of coming in, something has to be done. Now, I know Courtois is talking about managing the workload, but you'll have to kind of go in depth and try and figure out what's happening to have so many players injured. Some of them were knocks, some of them were soft tissue injuries, but hopefully everything's okay with Waterman, because to circle back to your first question, if he's not available, now you're not back to square one, but you're saying, okay, like we're kind of starting over at the back.
Yeah, and you have to think from an individual perspective.
Copa America.
How he's come along leaps and bounds. Yeah, Copa America on the horizon, and before that, Netherlands and France.
Absolutely.
And Jesse Marsh's first roster under the MLS head coach men's national team, you know, this 12 or 15 word title that Jesse Marsh has got now, but we'll see if Joel Waterman lands on that, but he should, as his career trajectory continues to be on the rise. So thanks very much for listening. You've got other MLS specific pods dropping. You've got TFCs, you've got Whitecaps, you've got our Box to Box dropping later on this week, and a broadcast that you can catch up on with myself and Reen Wilkinson chatting Bev Priestman's latest roster drop as they get set to face Mexico at Stade Saputo this Saturday. So if you don't have your tickets yet, please get your tickets and support this team in person. We got to pack the stadium as they get set to less than 60 days now, I think, until the Paris Olympics, and in an attempt to defend their gold medal. So cheers for listening, everybody, and we'll catch you next week.
All the best.
This episode of Footy Prime has been brought to you by Fubo TV. Make sure to subscribe to Footy Prime wherever you get your podcasts, and follow us on Twitter at @Footy_Prime and on Instagram at @FootyPrimeIG. And visit wearefootyprime.com and sign up for our newsletter. What up, Primers? JC here. Can't get enough of Footy Prime the podcast? Why not head over to Footy Prime's YouTube? Head to youtube.com/footyprime for exclusive video content. Then make your way over to wearefootyprime.com for all things Footy Prime, including our official gear from Admiral and our One Ball Gin from Nickel 9 Distillery. And make sure to follow and subscribe across all platforms, from Twitter to Instagram to Facebook to TikTok. Footy Prime has got you covered for all things footy. Thanks so much for listening, and back to the show.